Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Everything Iconic with me, Danny Pellegrino. Today on the show, we're going to be recapping this week's Real Housewives of Atlanta. There's also a bunch of Housewives news that we need to get to. And then after all of the Bravo stuff, I have an interview with Brian Michael Smith, who's on 911 Lone Star on Fox. It's a great show. If you haven't watched it with Rob Lowe, check it out. And I hope you'll stick around for that interview because it's really good stuff. And I'll put it up on the YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/Danny Pellegrino and the number one if you want to watch it. Before we get into any of that, though, there's so much stuff happening in our Bravo cinematic universe. We've got to break it all down. Roni, of course, was filming their upcoming season. They're at the tail end, and they were set to go on their cast trip. Somebody in the cast, unfortunately, has contracted COVID, and they have to take a two-week break, according to Page Six. Now, when this news came out, everyone online was saying that it was Ramona. We know now, I believe, from following Ramona on social media, that it's not her. She did say at the reunion that she had the antibodies, and now I don't believe it was her. And I had heard it was not her, but it was interesting to me that everyone just assumed. I went on Twitter and everyone's like, it's Ramona, it's Ramona. And I was thinking, Ramona's like reading the timeline and just thinking like, why is everyone saying it's me? And it's like, because Ramona, you're the most irresponsible according to social media. But I don't believe it's her. And speaking of Roni, did you guys see on social media when Dorinda went on Instagram? And Ramona had posted on Instagram a picture of like Tinsley and I think it was Leah and Countess Luann. And it said like, we're a dysfunctional family. And everyone was trying to decode, like, does that mean Tinsley was filming for the upcoming season? Like, what does that mean? But Dorinda got really upset and she commented on it. And then it didn't really make any sense what Dorinda's comment was. But then Dorinda went and posted her own post on Instagram. And it was like this video from the finale party of last season. And you couldn't hear what was going on in the video. So everyone in the comments was like, well, what the fuck does this mean? And Dorinda was just commenting back like, yep. She wasn't answering anyone's questions. She was just commenting back like, yep, that's it. And people were like, what does this mean, Dorinda? And it just made me miss Dorinda. I know we haven't even started airing the next season, but I just thought, what are we going to be doing here without Dorinda? I can't believe we're going to be missing her next season. And I love her so much. And her whole social media presence over this past week just made me miss her. And again, don't know what we're going to be doing without her.
Thank you, Giovanni!
She's still at least someone we could follow on Instagram. Just commenting back. Yep, that's it. What else is going on? Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, they released their reunion looks. My favorite look was Whitney. I thought she looked like, a lot of people posted this, that she looked like a Barbie, a holiday Barbie. She had the big flowy red dress. I thought the color looked fantastic on her. I thought all of the women looked pretty good. Meredith is wearing sort of like this half suit, half dress thing, which is interesting. It's interesting to me. I don't think it's my favorite look by any means, but I do like that it's something like totally batshit insane, and I'm into it. And I wonder if Brooks made her do it. Who made her do it? Who else? I think Heather looks great. I think they all look pretty good for their first season reunion. When I saw that Orange County reunion picture that came out, I was like, thought it was just truly one of the worst collective looks we've ever seen in a Housewives cast. And so when Salt Lake City came out for their first season, I thought they looked pretty good. And did you guys notice like the Salt Lake City set? It looks like one of those elaborate Hallmark holiday movie sets, which is my favorite thing in the world. And that's the highest of compliments coming from me. But it looks like Christmas just fucking exploded in the back of their set. And it's like, I can't wait for that. Meanwhile, the Orange County set looks like they just threw them in a warehouse. I feel like you guys, Orange County. Orange County, what's going on there? That was, to me, the worst finale we've ever had in Housewives. I'm sorry, it aired last week. I know we're not going to be breaking down that finale in detail, but what the fuck is going on over there? They all went to the beach. I know they had to deal with COVID, but like something's just off there. And it's a two-part reunion, which we all know means they didn't really have much from the season or the reunion. I don't know. It's really embarrassing how far we've come with Orange County from the peak of the Brooks years. I know we all hated Brooks, but those years of television were some compelling stuff. When Vicki Gunvalson was faking the cancer situation with the Brooks, I mean, that was compelling TV, and now here we are, and I'm like, what is even going on in this finale? Meanwhile, Bronwyn, who I think we all had high hopes for at the beginning of the season, now she's all over with paparazzi. Have you seen all these paparazzi photos of the Bronwyn? Oh my God, you guys. First and foremost, I'd like to say that I don't think any paparazzi photos camping out or photographers camping out in the Orange County to take a photo of Bronwyn. Not even at the height of the Real Housewives world. You know, I'm talking about the table flip years when millions and millions of people were tuning into these shows. Not even then do I believe that paparazzi were camping out at these women's houses. I mean, back then you did have paparazzi photos of Teresa or pre-Teresa jail, post-Teresa prison situation. There certainly were photographers that were looking for photos of them, of people like Teresa, but I just don't believe that there's a paparazzi in Orange County, no less, in the midst of a pandemic that are looking to take photos of Bronwyn Wyndham Burke. I just don't buy it. So I believe that whoever her publicist is must be really good. I believe whoever Bronwyn's using to do these services is doing a great job because these photos are popping up. I'm seeing in the Daily Mail. I saw them on Twitter, these photos, and she's trying to be real casual. There's one of her with her girlfriend, and then there was a photo of Sean. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm sorry. There's no way a paparazzi is waiting at a restaurant to take a photo of Sean. He's not even a cast member. He's the husband of a cast member. There's no way. I mean, I could explain it to you, but I can't understand it for you. There's no way this is a thing. And so, look, they're fooling us all. We're all getting bamboozled by these paparazzi shots. But it is exhausting. It is exhausting. And I'm someone who wanted to like Bronwyn. I did. But I don't. I sure don't. And so I'm not saying that she hires paparazzi to come take photos of her out and about, but I am implying it. I am implying it. What else? And that reunion, you guys, or that finale of Orange County, it was rough. And I'm going to say something. We're going to get into the Real Housewives of Atlanta right now, and I'm just going to say something that's going to be very disappointing to you guys. I'm sorry. But I hate to be negative on this show. I try to always find the good in these shows, but I do think that this was one of the worst weeks in Bravo history. I'm sorry. I know I shouldn't say that. There was definitely good stuff. And even a bad week in Bravo is still better than most other things on TV. But between that Orange County finale and then this week's Real Housewives of Atlanta, you guys. This week's Real Housewives of Atlanta, I'm sorry to say, it felt like watching paint dry. It did. Now, I want to say at the end of the episode, they did play like a trailer and it said like coming up in the next few weeks, let's play a little clip from that trailer. It's a quick trailer. Let's just listen to what's coming up on the show after this week's episode.
For the next few weeks.
Oh, okay.
Yes, honey. Yes.
Join us on an epic girls trip.
You have entered the dungeon.
With enough twists and turns.
Why are you rubbing all up on him?
That will make you wonder. Who did that?
There's not enough holy water or sage in the world to erase what went down in this house.
I had to see his penis.
Okay. Now, first of all, I don't think that Bravo has ever really done this. Normally, they have a mid-season trailer, but this was like a weird coming up in the next few weeks. So does that mean we're mid-season? Does that mean... I assume this season is shortened. Now, don't get me wrong. That trailer looked really good. It seems like we're going to get to that whole situation with the stripper, with the PPE that somebody allegedly hooks up with on the cast trip. But it seems strange to me that we're already seeing it so early in the season. And then why didn't they just say it's mid-season? If it is mid, even if it's a shortened season, why didn't they say mid-season? Now, also, if you watch the video of it, there's like this strange confessional shot of Kenya Moore looking like Sharon Stone in Basic Instinct, where she's in like that dress. And I'm like, what is happening? Did they dress up Kenya? Is Kenya acting at this point? I know Kenya, you know, she really plays it up for the cameras, but is she acting like Sharon Stone in that trailer? And then Candy's doing the narration and she's like, who said that? Like she's calling on her old lines. What is going on over in Atlanta? They're normally so good, and normally Atlanta, again, even a bad episode of Atlanta is still better than anything else on TV, but this was one of, I believe, maybe I was just in a bad place when I was watching this week's episode, but I really thought, like, this is the worst. We've come so far. And look, I don't know if it's because of the pandemic stuff, but if it is, maybe we all need to take a little breather, regroup for a second, and then start filming. Maybe we don't need to hop in to all of these shows and just start filming immediately if we don't have anything going on. There's enough shows on Bravo to go around. Like, let's take a beat and let's wait until things get good. Again, at least it seems like we're turning a corner on The Real Housewives of Atlanta and it'll get good. But this week, you guys, was not it. It was not it. Let's see. We open with, there was like a little montage. We see Kenya with her marketing person and she's trying to do some new branded product called Less is More with Kenya. And the marketing woman is like, you got to put your last name in there. You got to put Kenya in the name. And she's like, I sure do. And that's good branding. I'll be honest. That's good branding. Then we see Drew and Ralph. They're playing around and Ralph's honestly a hot man. I just don't like him. He's a hot man and I'm not going to be dickmatized by Ralph because he doesn't seem like a good human to me. At least maybe I'll turn a corner. I might change my mind. I mean, we talked a little bit about Orange County and that other one, Emily's husband, Shane, I turned a corner with him and I sort of like him now. So, you know, worse, crazier things have happened. Then we see Cynthia again. She's planning for this wedding.
To the future, Mr. and Mrs. Chill.
Mr. and Mrs. Chill have invited 250 people and she's like 167 have confirmed. How did this happen? She's like so shocked that 167 people have confirmed. And I am too. I'm shocked that 167 people are going to a wedding at the height of this pandemic, but apparently it's something that's happening. And I'm exhausted by the wedding already. I sort of think I was really racking my brain here. And I sort of feel like production has somehow made Cynthia the star of this show. And I know Portia has the most star power. Okay. I understand that. Portia definitely has the most star quality. She's the funniest. She's the most appealing. She's got that X factor, I believe. But Portia is kind of off doing her own stuff this season. Of course, she's doing the wonderful work for the Black Lives Matter movement. And she is the one we're most drawn to. But it feels like the season is revolving around Cynthia and this wedding business. And that feels like a production mistake to me. We've already seen Cynthia do the wedding thing. No one wants to watch it right now. I don't know why she has by default become the lead of the show. I don't get it. And then she's talking about the dad. There is some drama about inviting the dad to the wedding. And there was also drama about the mom. Cynthia's mom was upset that she did the PSA for Kenya a few seasons ago and like didn't realize it was on camera. I'm like, what do you mean you didn't realize? Even Cynthia said to her, like, I'm sorry that you did that thing on camera that you knew was on camera and then was mad about it after it aired. Like, that's how cameras work. Cynthia's mom. I don't even know Cynthia's mom's name. She's a beautiful gal, though. Then we see a scene with Drew and Ralph talking about Ralph is grieving his father. Ralph does apologize to Drew, which I like, but I still am not buying it. And then they release a bunch of Richards into the sky. Richards, of course, are balloons disguised as people. And this is a scene that, again, reminded me so much of The Real Housewives of New York. If you got that reference, you must watch Roni. And I hope you all watch Roni because it's one of the best. But we all remember on Roni when Dorinda believed that the balloon was the ghost of Richard. And now we're believing that Ralph's father is one of the balloons here on The Real Housewives of Atlanta. Remember, they released all these balloons into the sky, which I don't believe you're supposed to do. So don't take this as something you should do because technically it's just like littering. You know, I hate to get all on my high horse here, but I don't think that you're supposed to release balloons into the sky. It's not a thing. But I understand people grieve differently. You know, everyone grieves differently. Just maybe find a new way to do it. And I don't know that I have to explain this to everyone, but balloons aren't people. Balloons aren't people. And so now that this has happened on multiple Housewives franchises where we believe a balloon is a person, this time we're believing that Ralph's father is a balloon. When it stopped at the house, they released all these balloons. It looked like the house from Up going up in the air. And then one of them just stopped at the roof. And then Drew and Ralph were like, oh, that's your father. And I thought, no, it's not. Although I say that as someone, everyone grieves differently, and I say that as someone who just released a podcast episode with the Long Island Medium, for those of you that listened or watched it on YouTube, you could see in the middle of it that I cried hysterically when my grandmother came up. So who am I to judge? We all grieve differently. We all grieve differently. Let's see. Then we cut to Candy at home. She's doing like a grocery charity thing. Candy's lawyer called about getting money from Riley's dad. We didn't talk about Riley's goodbye last week, but it was truly sad. I mean, I was bawling throughout that Riley goodbye when Riley was going off to the college. I cried my eyes out. And baby Ace, when baby Ace was like talking about Riley, and what did he say? Riley likes clean something, or I was losing it. That baby Ace is the most cute, adorable kid. Adorable kid. Anyway, Candy's trying to get the money from Riley's dad. And then the makeup artist, they're doing all of Candy's, they're beating her face, you know, in metaphorical terms. And the makeup artist is like, why are you trying to get money? Like, you have the money. And Candy's like, it's not about that. And I agree with Candy. It's like, this man, if he's making all this money, he should have paid child support. Come on. Come on. Anyway, then we cut to Portia and Cynthia. This was boring. You guys, this scene was boring. And I'd say Portia is the most naturally funny. Last week, she did this bit about opening her legs to Dennis, and it was like a stand-up routine. I could have seen it on an HBO special. It was so, so good. But this scene, it ain't it. And Cynthia, I just wrote in my notes, go girl, give us nothing. Because I wrote, Cynthia, go girl, give us nothing. It was just boring. I'm sorry. This scene was boring. I need him to ramp up the energy or something. And again, love Portia, but this scene ain't it. Also, I was thinking about Bravo chat room. So Portia's on that with Kate Chastain and Hannah Berner and Giselle from Housewives of Potomac. And I sort of wish they had a rotating panel on that show. I wish they would, because I love Portia on it. I don't know. Then we cut to Cynthia. She's on the phone with Noelle, who's an influencer now. Noelle's going to come visit for the wedding. She's going to come home for 2 weeks. Cynthia wants her there for longer, but Noelle's like, look, I got influencing to do. Now, could Noelle do the influencing from Lake Bailey? Sure. But she only wants to stay for 2 weeks, which I think is plenty of time. Then we have Candy's charity event, which is called Candy Cares, which this seems like a great thing. But I'm sorry, watching the cast pack celery isn't my idea of fun. It's just not. They all just had stalks of celery in their hands. And Kenya was trying to kind of mix it up. She was stirring the pot with Portia and Dennis. And to me, it feels like Kenya's the only one really working. And I can't even imagine in the early days of the pandemic, when we were all so emotionally, mentally, physically drained from everything that was going on and everything that we're taking in. I couldn't imagine having to film a TV show and be so up and energetic and all of that. And that's what these people are having to do. But it's like, that's why we should have waited, because this scene, I'm sorry, it's boring. I wrote in my notes in this for this point, I wrote, I'm bored, mama. I don't know why I added the mama, but I wrote, I'm bored, mama. Even when Marlo shows up, Marlo's always like a shot of adrenaline in the arm. And it was like, Marlo was even boring me a little bit. She did donate $5,000 to Candy's charity, and I like seeing them do the charity work, but Drew wasn't even there. Drew's quarantining. I'm like, did Drew get the COVID? Like, why is she quarantining? Did they explain that? Did I just check out when they explained that? Because what is going on? And then Kenya, she sits everyone down at a table and is like, I know we're all going stir crazy, so we need a vacation. And I'm thinking, I'm going stir crazy and I need a vacation, but I can't. So it's like, I'm not having fun watching this show. Sorry. I'm not. I'm sorry. Also, when I mentioned that this was a really terrible week in Bravo, I didn't mention that Southern Charm was also inexplicably bad this week. They did bamboozle us by saying it's like part one of the season finale. And then nothing happened. I don't know why they were trying to act like part one of this thrilling two-parter. I'm like, nothing happened. Why did you trick me? Always tricking me. I'm on to you guys. I love you, Bravo, with all of my heart, but you're got to stop it. You got to stop trying to bamboozle me into thinking I'm watching a thrilling two-part epic finale and then giving me nothing. Go, girl, give us nothing. Okay, don't do it to me again. I'm sorry. And Southern Charm, what is happening over there? It's such a mess. It's such a mess right now. And Southern Charm, we've had some real high heights. You know, I love that season when it was like the women versus the men. And now, I don't know, Pringle. I like Pringle, but he feels like he's on a different show. I'm sorry, we're going to take a little Southern Charm detour for a second. Pringle feels like he's on a separate show. Something totally different. I also can't watch one more minute of Madison and Austin. Not one more minute. I don't want to see it anymore. It's crazy. The relationship, they were sitting down this past week and they were like, I don't want to be with you, but like, you're not allowed to be with anyone else. It's like, what the fuck? That's crazy. And enough is enough. Taylor Armstrong, enough with you guys. I don't want one more frame of Austin and Madison. Quite frankly, I don't even want to watch that Muppet on TV anymore. I like Madison, but Austin, I don't know. And Craig, I thought Craig could maybe be a good narrator instead of Cam, but I was wrong. And not enough Patricia. And then they introduced all these other new people, which they got great diversity. They added a bunch of new people, but they weren't properly introduced. So when we saw Pringle for the first time, we saw him at home. We got to know him a bit. Or Leva, we got to know her a bit. But they added all these other people. And it's like, who are they? They just are like, oh, she works at Gwyn's or something. It's like, I don't really understand. Like, now these people are around all the time, but they weren't properly introduced. Sorry to go off like that. I feel like I'm being so negative this week. I'm sorry. You know, I love the Bravo. Bravo people, executives, if you're listening. This is also maybe not the best time to say I'm going to be on Watch What Happens Live on Tuesday night. I'm sorry, Bravo. I love you. I love you guys. I say it because I care. I say it because I care about all these shows. So then we have Cynthia's picking up Noelle from the airport. She sits down. This is that scene with the mom, and they're all wearing those face shields, and the mom's mad about the PSA. Cynthia did have a moment that really broke my heart, where she said she feels bad about the mom getting pregnant with her, and she just doesn't want to disappoint the mom. And I thought it was a beautiful moment. She said that in the confessional. And so, you know, again, Atlanta, these women are entertaining in general. It's just, this was sort of a rough episode. And I could tell that's why they gave us that little thrilling preview at the end of the episode, because I think they knew this was a flop episode. So they were like, we got to give them something. You know, I could just picture the editors and producers like emailing each other like, this is the worst episode. We know this is terrible. Like, put something, you got to put a trailer or something after it because we know this is bad. They knew it. So I don't even think I'm speaking out of turn when I talk about how shitty this episode was, because they knew it. They knew it by giving us that trailer. They were saying, we know this is a flop episode, but hang in there because we're going to give you some good stuff. And it looks like some good stuff is coming. So let's hang on tight. Let's just know we got some good stuff coming. Now, that's all the Housewives stuff. Before I play my interview, I want to say, please find me on social media at Danny Pellegrino on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to support this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/everythingiconic. If you donate $4 more per month, you get access to the bonus episodes. And I'm doing Sex and the City recaps over there right now, one a month. And more importantly, the money supports the show. Also, we have new merch available, everythingiconic.store. Just go to that website and you can see we have Queen Icon Legend face masks now, and we just got the wine glasses in stock. We were out of stock for a while because those sell out pretty quickly, so we got some of those. So with all of that said, I want to play my chat with Brian Michael Smith. This is a really interesting conversation, and right before the interview, when I was doing my research, I learned that Brian and I actually graduated from Kent State. So I spent my first 2 years of college at Ohio University, and then I transferred to Kent and finished up my degree there, Kent State in Ohio. And I learned that Brian actually graduated from the same program a couple years before me, but I thought maybe we might have had some classes together, which is such a small world. But Brian Michael Smith is also in this fantastic documentary called Disclosure, which we talk about briefly. And it's about trans representation in media. And Brian is, of course, a trans actor, and it's such an amazing documentary. I hope you guys will check it out. And also 911 Lone Star, you guys know I love it. I talked about it last season on the show, and I find it very compelling. I'm a little scared because Liv Tyler's not on this upcoming season, but it's a thrilling show, and there's really hot people, a lot of gays, a lot of LGBTQ content, storylines. So you guys check it out. And I'll play that, and I'll leave you guys with this chat with Brian Michael Smith from 911 Lone Star. This episode of Everything Iconic is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. Now, I'm not sure if you've noticed, but it's definitely allergy season. You all know I've been struggling a little bit. I usually love the springtime, but I struggle with my allergies, which are just not the most fun. But luckily with Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, the only tissues I like to use, I can say, bring on the blooms, and I can face those allergies head on. Now, Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved, so you can attack watery eyes and battle runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. That's why I love these, because they're so incredibly soft, and I don't want to touch my nose with something that's not. Now, I am obsessed with Kleenex. I think they are so really just the best to do it. So for this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on. Again, this allergy season, do not pick up something else. Grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
All right, Brian Michael Smith, of course, from 911 Lone Star. Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Good. Welcome to Everything Iconic. I was doing my research, and we actually graduated from the same school. You graduated from Kent State University, right?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I graduated from Kent too. And also from the video production program, I think around the same time, we might have like had a class together or something.
Is that right? Do you know Mike Verratti? I mean, he's doing like similar things.
I know who he is, but I don't know. Yeah.
What a small world.
Oh, my God.
That's amazing. Yeah, man.
Did you remember Carl Eidsvug? This is sort of a... Yeah, I have nightmares about him, Brian.
What the heck? Oh, my gosh. Him and Ron Thomas were just like the two guys. I was just like, I don't want to. Anyway, that's wild, man.
No one's going to know what we're talking about. But yeah, I literally have nightmares about that man still to this day.
Him and the Black Rose, man.
Yeah. Brian, talk to me about 911 Lone Star. I love the show. I've been watching. I've seen every episode. I love it. But tell me about the new season, about your role, all of that stuff.
I'm excited about the new season of 911 Lone Star. We're picking up into the quarantine. We're like bringing that into it. So you're seeing like, you know, what have we been up to in the months since, you know, things kind of popped off. And, I thought that because of the COVID protocols with production and whatnot, they're like, oh man, they're going to probably scale things down until we can. They have not. So we have bigger emergencies that we're dealing with. And, you know, everything's just as action-oriented as possible. But what's been really cool is to see how we've been exploring the deepening relationships between the characters on the show and how they've evolved, you know, over time, like because of COVID forcing us together, or like just kind of upending our personal lives in ways. And you're kind of seeing how that's going to play out over the season. So we got some new characters coming in that you didn't see before. We have some characters who are not going to be joining us again. And just kind of like,
We're not going to have Liv again, are we? Is Liv?
No. Yeah. So Liv is
I'm
not.
I'm going to miss Liv, Brian.
Yeah, no, she was.
I love her.
So fun to work with. Just as sweet as her voice, you know, and like, you know, it made everything like a good time. So we definitely miss her in the production, and, you know, the door is open for her character. So, you know, so that's a plus.
So hopefully we'll get her back at some point. Hopefully she'll pop back in.
It's the Tim Minear Rashad world. Things can happen. If we can have a volcano in Austin, I think we can get some more Michelle Blake. You know what I mean?
My favorite thing from last season was just she'd be delivering these like very intense lines, but she has, like you said, the sweetest voice ever. And it was just, I loved it. I loved the sort of dichotomy of it.
Yes. It just throw it off, because it's like, you know, you got us coming in, it's all testosterone. Like, let's go. We got this. Captain, if you don't give this child, you tell him. Yeah.
Did you ever see her opened? I'm sorry to make this about Liv Tyler now, but did you see her Architectural Digest open tour? It's like a tour of her house. It's Brian, just go check it out. It's the best thing I've ever seen in my whole life.
Okay, I'm doing it. I'm creeping in her house. I need to know what's going on over there.
Okay, so your character, what's to come for your character specifically?
So Paul, you were getting to know a little bit more about Paul and seeing him open up, which has been great. In the first season, you know, he was still feeling everything out, you know, and like, you know, kind of getting to know people. He's a man a few words. I feel like this season he's opening up a bit more, so you're getting to see a little bit more about his humor. You're getting to see a little bit more about his relationship with his comrades, and you get to know a little bit more about his family and his backstory, which I think is going to be interesting.
And forgive me if I get this wrong, but it's the first trans Black series regular on network TV, right?
Black trans masculine character on network TV.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And so have you heard from a lot of trans youths and people, and what's that been like?
I have. I've kept my my DM opens for that specific reason. I work at the LGBT center in Manhattan in their youth program, and it was an experience for me that let me know just how important it is to be accessible for young people, or people who are not necessarily young chronologically, but maybe young in their relationship to their identity and their truth, and how much of a difference it makes to have a real person, to be able to see a real person doing things that you would want to do for yourself, and to be able to like talk to them, you know, either for encouragement or, you know, to ask questions and things like that. So I've had a lot of young people reach out to me and either just, you know, let them know how much my character, my work has meant to them, or just how much me as an individual kind of putting myself out there and going after my dreams has meant to them. And that's been amazing. And I like having parents talk to me about how they've been able to have more understanding for their child and stick up for their child when they're facing discrimination in school and their community, because they realize that, you know, a lot of it is fear-based and they don't have to be as afraid of their child not having a future as they were before. You know, like we still have to deal with bullying and violence and the threat of violence for sure. But, you know, just knowing that there is a path for them into adulthood, you know, goes a long way. So profound to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think about that time at Kent State, and you know, I'm a gay man, and I think about representation when I was in college or in high school, and there wasn't much of it. And it's so incredibly important for kids to be able to see themselves on screen in all sorts of different roles, mm-hmm. because it lets them know that there is that future. And
yeah. I mean, growing up in, you know, in the Midwest and not seeing anybody like me made me think that I was the only one like me. Mm-hmm. And that was so isolating. So even though I was gregarious and I was trying all these things to connect and be around people, you know, I just felt this difference that I felt like was going to get in the way or like stop me from doing what I really want to do. And it wasn't until I was in my 20s that I, you know, realized that, okay, I can be who I want to be, but that might mean I have to sacrifice what I really want to do. So then for like my mid 20s, I was doing that. I was doing all this acting adjacent work because I thought, if I'm going to be who I am, then I'm not going to be able to do that. And so, you know, it wasn't until I saw Laverne Cox in my 30s, you know, that I realized I can be who I am and do what I want to do. Right. And I'm going to do that, you know?
You mentioned Laverne, and one of my favorite documentaries of the past, I don't know how long, was Disclosure on Netflix. It was, if anyone hasn't watched it, immediately go to Netflix and watch it. You were one of the talking heads in it. And it was such a important piece to just show it. Speaking of representation, how far we've come, but also how far we still have to go. And, you know, one of the things that struck me, and it's kind of gone viral, Jen Richards is talking about specifically Eddie Redmayne. I forget the name of the movie where he plays a trans woman.
The Danish Girl?
Yes. Yes. That's it. There's a clip that sort of went viral of Jen talking about that performance and how it's so important to have trans people in trans roles. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that.
Well, the reason why it's important to have trans people in trans roles is this association that people have that trans people aren't real, that trans people are men who dress up like women or women who dress up like men. And when you have a male actor playing a trans female character, and then they show up in the interviews and on the red carpet and, you know, peeled and just in their tuxedos and like, you know, see, it was a man, it reinforces that idea. And people respond with violence to that idea, you know, when they are dealing with real trans people in the real world, because they have that association that you're just a man in a dress or you're just a woman who's dressing like a man. And they have this, you know, visceral response to that. And just if we can show that trans people are real people who exist, not just in the character on the screen, but then also outside of that fictional space, that they exist in real life and that they're real functioning human people as well, it starts to diminish that association. And you get to start to realize that, oh, trans people do exist and they have always existed and they're going to continue to exist. And they are going about their lives in their daily business, and it is not impacting me in the way that I've been coached to fear it's going to impact me, right? You know, so you have people who feel like they need to enforce and support, you know, bathroom bills and locker room bills and keep, you know, trans people out of sports because of this idea that keeps getting reinforced whenever you see a man playing a trans woman.
Right. You know, I always think about people who are sort of breaking the glass ceiling you know, with the pressure that comes with that, because, you know, here I am, I'm interviewing you and I'm asking you these questions that are very large, heavy questions. And I wonder the emotional toll that must take to always have to, or to always be asked stuff like that. Does that make sense?
It does. And I feel like it, you know, there's a lot of trans actors who are not out, you know, for that specific reason, not because they have any shame about who they are or, you know, even a fear of a limiting of access to opportunities. They just don't want to do that educational labor. And, you know, most of the interviews, you know, I do get a chance to talk about the work sometimes, but then a lot of the conversation will go to, you know, the impact and, you know, being trans. But for me, I consciously made a decision to do that. Like I consciously made a decision to, you know, to be publicly visible in this way so that I can have these conversations, that I can take the pressure off the people who don't necessarily want to have those conversations, because I'll do that. Just like I decided to use my art, you know, as my activism, as opposed to, you know, some of the other activists who, you know, like Chase Strangio is working for the ACLU and is actually going into the Supreme Court and, you know, challenging, you know, anti-trans legislation, or, you know, people who are going into the street and organizing the community and organizing community demonstrations. Like everybody sort of picks their lane. And as someone who, you know, worked at the LGBT Community Center, did community organizing, and, you know, am comfortable having the conversation and kind of tries to stay abreast of what's happening within the community and what information I feel like needs to get out, I'm okay with having those conversations.
Well, thank you.
They need to be had.
I think it's so important. And also I just am so grateful to people like you who are willing to openly talk about it, because again, it's emotionally exhausting to have these conversations. And, you know, there's certain people who have broken glass ceilings who are constantly called on to have these heavy conversations. And so I thank you. Yeah. Brian, what's next for you? What are your aspirations outside of 911 Lone Star? Like what's next, or what do you hope for?
Well, you know, I was hoping to start getting to some films when we go into the hiatus. Like I love doing the action on Lone Star, and, you know, somebody who grew up eating, you know, just action TV shows and films and just watching like so much. There's a lot of things that's like, okay, now I feel like I want to do that. So if I had my way, I would do a trifecta of action type movies. I would do a disaster film, I would do a war movie, and I would do a Western.
Oh, we need that, Brian.
Yes.
I find that's one of the things. I'm not normally an action guy, but I'm like watching 911 Lone Star and I'm loving it. There's so many hot people on it in general. Like all of you guys are like, everyone's gorgeous.
I love going to work.
Yeah. I mean, oh my God, like that cat. What's it like working with Rob Lowe? Is he a nice guy? Do you like
him? He is a nice guy. Like, you know, he's one of these people you can tell is like they've been in the industry for a long time. They know how things are supposed to go and they're going to make sure that things go in that way. But he also loves what he does. So there's a joy that he kind of brings to work too, because it's like, you know, he enjoys it. And he's done TV a lot, but I think this is his first like lead vehicle. And so I think he's like, you know, enjoying that and like, you know, bringing that to work. So it's been really fun to like, you know, to talk to him, watch what he like. I learned a lot from him just from watching him like work and like, you know, how he works with the cameras and finds the angles and whatnot, or, you know, finds like, you know, if he can take a scene like on the page, it looks great. It's in rehearsal, it's great. And then like, you know, he'll find a moment. It's like, this is what's going to take it to that, you know? And like, it's like watching a masterclass sometimes. So that's been fun.
I'm a huge Martin Short fan, and he had Martin Short on his podcast. I listened to it. It was so funny to just hear them talk about stories from throughout the years of Hollywood. And that's like, they've worked with you forget kind of some of these people have worked with everyone. And
he has so many, he has stories, I tell you, man, literally about almost everybody. So that's been fun too. Like getting my own like Hollywood history lessons whenever I go to work.
What kind of stuff do you like? What's your favorite movie? Do you have like a couple of movies that are your go-to? You mentioned you love the action genre. Is there like one or two movies you won't stop if you're flipping through channels?
You know, I'm like, I love Titanic. Titanic, I think, is one of those like secret engines that really propelled me to go after it, because it was one of the most transformative experiences I've had in a movie theater, where like it just took me somewhere. I'm like, I love that. And
the first time I ever saw Titanic was on VHS. Remember they had to put it in two VHS? Yeah.
I pre-ordered those two tapes and I think I had to go pick it up at Sam Goody or some shit. And
the old world, that was like two VHS tapes.
Yeah, but I like Titanic. I absolutely love. I love Interstellar. I could watch that, and Black Panther. It's another one of those things that just I feel like I go to Wakanda every time I do it. You know what I mean?
Right, Brian. We need to see you in a Marvel movie.
I think so.
Brian, thank you so much for taking the time. I look forward to watching the premiere of 911 Lone Star. Where can people find you on social media?
They can find me at the Brian Michael on Twitter and at the _ Brian Michael on Instagram.
Thank you so much, Brian, for taking the time, and congrats on all the success. And hopefully we'll meet in person sometime. We'll talk a little bit more about Kent.
Thanks, Danny.
Bye-bye.